Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to part 2 of the Swag Cast. Now we continue with The Man Called X. This was an episode which aired on the 26th of June 1947, and it's called Rembrandt in Rio.
Frigidaire presents Herbert Marshall as The Man Called X. Wherever there is mystery, intrigue, romance, and all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find The Man Called X. And now Frigidaire presents Herbert Marshall as Ken Thurston, The Man Called X. Anyone looking for Ken Thurston in New York takes on quite a job. There's one spot, though, where he's pretty certain to turn up sooner or later, and that's Barry McCarthy's original turkey stag.
Well, is it hard enough that I'm making it for you, Mr. Thurston?
Hard enough. Barry, I'll never use another steam clam as long as I live.
Good. Thank you, sir.
So what, are you a friend of the clams?
Hello? Mr. McCarthy?
Why, Mr. Selsmith.
Oh, no.
Good morning. I'm in a very big hurry. I've got to find Mr. Thurston. Is he in here, maybe?
Well, it's a matter...
Come on in, Pagan. I'm quartered.
Huh? Oh, hello, Mr. Thurston. You don't have any clothes on.
I'll take them off in the steam room. That's an old habit of mine.
Oh. Mr. Thurston, I'm going to make you a millionaire.
Fine. How much is it going to cost me?
Not over 30,000. Huh? Not anything in a long run.
Pagan, I haven't got 30,000. I don't feel like a long run. Now, hammer that towel, will you?
But, Mr. Thurston, it's like shooting fish in a bathtub. You could at least listen to me tell it to you.
Sure, why not?
Well, this morning I get a letter from my cousin Zilda in Rio de Janeiro. That's in South America.
So I've heard, yeah.
Some artist named Oscar Doe told her confidential, of course, that a painting called The Cynic can be bought for about $30,000.
The Cynic?
Yeah. But some guy named Rembrandt, I think.
Oh, no, wait. The Cyndic.
Ah, Cyndic.
Sure, one of Rembrandt's three greatest works.
Ah, so Zilda says that some private collector would pay maybe $500,000 for this painting, you see?
Sounds pretty obvious, Tigger. Barry, where's that phone you have in here?
Right there, Mr. Sutton.
Thanks. Hello? Could you tell me the present location of Rembrandt's painting? The Syndic of the Clockmaker's Guild? Thanks very much. Well, Pagan, your art career is over.
Good. Now,
The painting we're going to buy for $30,000 was purchased in Amsterdam in 1923 by Van Allen Haven. He brought it to New York, and right now it's hanging in the Haven Galleries on 44th Street.
But!
You better wire Cousin Zilda, Pagan. Tell her to stop taking wooden nickels.
That was my attitude, Mr. Thurston, when you first suggested such a possibility. But there's no question about it now. The tests are complete. The four Rembrandts hanging in the Haven Galleries are a very clever fake.
Well, Ken, that hunch of yours seems to have paid off in a pretty fair-sized jackpot.
There's a jackpot, all right, Chief, but I'm not sure who's collecting it. What would you say the paintings are worth, Mr. Freeman?
Well, to certain wealthy and unscrupulous collectors, heaven knows there are plenty of them, not less than $3 million.
Phew.
Yes, you've got to recover them, Mr. Thurston.
Particularly in view of its tie-up with the Haven Scholarship, Ken.
Hmm?
Yes, you see, Mr. Haven provided in his will that the paintings in the Haven Gallery be posted as a lien to finance the Haven Exchange Scholarship.
Oh?
Yes, these scholarships permit 20 graduate students from U.S. colleges to study in South America each year, and the same number to come from South American colleges to this country.
And the minute the bank discovers these pictures are fakes, bang, there goes the scholarship fund.
Hmm. Mr. Freeman, being curator of the gallery, you've had plenty of chances to look at these paintings. Why is it you've never noticed they were copies before?
Because they're the most perfect reproductions I've ever seen. Not an expert in the world would doubt them without making tests.
Have you any idea when they may have been substituted for the originals?
Certainly not during the year I've been curator.
Uh-huh. Who was in charge before you?
John Torme.
Torme?
Yes, he operated the gallery for 10 years following Mr. Haven's death.
Oh? Where's he now?
He retired a year ago and went to live on a small island in the Bay of Rio.
Well, Ken?
Well, Chief.
Your attention, please. Flight to Rio de Janeiro to Buenos Aires, now loading at gate C. Flight to loading at gate C.
Rio de Janeiro. Ah, Mr. Thurston, the world's most beautiful city.
The soul of a poet. Leon, I thought you were posing as a painter.
What's the difference? I can be simultaneous. Mr. Thurston, did you know that Rembrandt was born in a windmill?
No.
Even at a very early age, he showed unmistakable signs of a genius and proved himself to be a master of chiaroscuro.
Think of it. At an early age, too.
It has often been said that
Yeah, I know, and I know where it's been said. That handbook of classic art sticking out of your pocket.
Oh, well, after all, if I've got to engage in negotiations with artists...
Leon, you'll engage in nothing. I brought you along for one reason. To look up your cousin Zilda and to find Oscar Doe.
Mr. X, perfectly, practically done. How about some expense money?
Hmm? At an early age, Mr. Zellsmith showed unmistakable signs of an itching palm. See you later, Payne.
Oh, but Mr. Thurston.
Hello there. Is this John Torme's island?
Right. Here, throw me your line.
Come here.
Got it? Clamp the rudder now. Easy there. Ah, that's it.
Thanks. When they fly the little waves, I thought I'd run out to open sea.
Yes, the bay is a bit rough this afternoon. I'm Ann Stovall.
My name's Ken Thurston, Miss Stovall. Well.
I practically live in a swimsuit.
A great way to live.
Thank you, Mr. Thurston. Shall we go on up to the house?
Sure, let's go. Are you a relative of Mr. Torme's?
Oh, no. I used to be his assistant when he managed the Haven Galleries in New York. So, when he and Mrs. Torme moved down here, I came along as a kind of friend of the family.
Any vacancies in the family?
Well, there might be.
Good, I'm filing an application.
Mr. Thurston, this approach of yours is intriguing, to say the least. But, don't you think it's a little flippant in view of what you've come for?
Wait, you know about that?
Well, of course. It's no secret, is it?
Apparently not.
I was surprised that you got here so quickly.
I'd hardly call it quickly. Well, let's move on.
If you don't mind my leaving you here, I think I'll run on up to the house and change.
Well, don't change into something more presentable. You couldn't.
Mr. Thurston, please. You can take this path here and go directly to the cottage. Then come on up to the house afterwards.
Fine, only why should I want to go to the cottage?
Well, you would like to see the corpse, wouldn't you?
Wait a minute. Let's sit down and talk things over. Exactly who do you think I am?
Why, the coroner, of course. Aren't you?
Miss Stovall, I'm a little confused in several ways, but one thing I'm certain, I'm not the coroner.
Oh, but I thought... Well, I mean, well, you see, we sent for him, so... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Thurston.
Why'd you need a coroner?
A guest who's been living in a beach cottage for several months died suddenly this morning. Heart failure, we think.
Oh, too bad. Close friend of the family?
Not exactly. He was a rather obscure artist named Oscar Dole.
I had very few guests here, Mr. Thurston. I'm so glad you came.
That's very kind of you, Mrs. Tormey.
Mr. Thurston, Carmen, and I were both quite pleased when Bob Freeman wired us you were coming.
Well, thanks to both of you.
You picked an excellent place for your vacation. When visitors come from other parts of the world, then I am the most proud of my city.
You were born here, Mrs. Tormey?
On this very island. And I had never been away until Don kidnapped me.
I always had the impression we eloped.
All right, perhaps I was willing. Anyway, enjoy yourself, Mr. Thurston. Still a long time.
I'd like to, but in view of the tragedy this morning, maybe...
I won't hear of it, Mr. Thurston. It isn't as though the man were a close friend. Don and his luck needed a place to stay, that's all.
Not too bad. Heart failure, wasn't it?
It looks that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, John. He found a despacho at his door last night.
Carmen!
What's a despacho?
A sign of death.
It's a piece of native tomfoolery, Mr. Thurston. There's an underground cult in Brazil called the Macumba, similar to the voodoo in Haiti. The despacho is their death threat or warning, supposed to be black magic.
I don't know, John. I've seen strange things happen. I think life is made up of light things and dark things, and the Macumba is one of the dark things.
Pardon,
please. Senor Torme here, Raul. What is it?
A man. He asked for Senor Dole.
Visitor for Dole? Well, show him in.
We begin.
Carmen doesn't really believe in the Macumba, Mr. Thurston. It's her sense of the dramatic.
Oh?
Senor Pietro von Zellschmidt.
What the... Hey, John.
How do you do? Huh? Mr. Thurston.
Why, are you two acquainted?
Oh, yes, we met around various art exhibits. Herr von Zellschmidt is quite an authority, you know.
I am? Oh, that is, of course... Especially on this fellow, Rembrandt.
Rembrandt?
Mm-hmm. For instance, did you know that in the year
of 16... Senor. Pardon, dinner is served.
You'll join us, of course, Mr. von Zellschmidt.
As I was saying about Rembrandt... Dinner?
For delight.
Delight.
I was completely wrong, Miss Stovall, and I may as well admit it.
Wrong? Why?
But there are things more flattering to you than a swimsuit. That dress, one of them.
Just for that, I'm going to start calling you Ken from now on.
From now on, Anne?
Well, for as long as you're here. But of course I don't believe you. You're only being the well-fed male, sitting on the terrace after dinner and completely satisfied with the world.
Well, I'm not all right. Look at those lights across the bay.
Ah, 1,000,000 fireflies. Rembrandt should have seen it. No one else could ever handle those lights and shadows.
You're an artist?
I paint watercolors mostly. I haven't the patience for oils. You're on an island of artists, you know.
You mean the Tormes?
Mm-hmm. And they're both very good at it, too.
She's quite a lovely woman, don't you think?
Very. And has a jealous husband, if that means anything.
Well, it's interesting, but not significant. I'm looking in another direction.
I could bid there, but I'll pass.
Anne, How well did you know Oscar Dole?
Oh, I scarcely knew him at all. I didn't like him, Ken, but I am sorry he died.
Pretty sudden, wasn't it?
Yes, but I guess that isn't so strange. There was a guard at the gallery in New York who died the same way about 3 years ago.
Oh?
They finally decided it was his heart.
Wait a minute, quiet.
What is it?
Someone there in the shrubbery.
Oh, here comes Mr. Tormey.
What's wrong with you, Thurston? What are you watching?
Someone's hiding there in the bushes.
I'll make short work of that. Stand back.
Oh,
don't shoot!
All right, come on out of that. Snap it up.
Don't shoot. I'm coming. I stumbled off the path. I was only trying to find the door.
Good Lord, Bob Freeman.
Hello. John, Mr. Thurston.
Nice to see you again, Mr. Freeman. For the curator of an art gallery, you certainly get around.
surprised to have him arrive.
Yes, and just as he planned, but he seems to be... Professor, you are still up?
We thought you'd turned in for the night, Mrs. Thurston.
Never thought I did start to.
There is something wrong. I told the servants to be sure you had everything you needed.
Oh, thanks. The room was very well supplied. In fact, almost too well.
What do you mean?
I found this package by my door.
Oh.
A dispatch.
I guess right, then. But it seems that I'm being warned.
The native superstition, that's all. Somebody's crude idea of a practical joke.
You don't know, John. You were not born here. I've seen these things before. I tell you, Mr. Thurston, if I ever found a despacho at my door, I should be utterly terrified. Yes. Even if I were the man called X.
Continue with Frigidaire's Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall. Four valuable Rembrandts have disappeared, and clever copies have been substituted. Ken Thurston, searching for them on a small island in the Bay of Rio de Janeiro, has been sent a death warning, the same kind of warning Oscar Dole received the night before he died. And now it's the next morning.
But Mr. Thurston, I didn't expect to see you here. I was positively caught with my mouth open. Flabbergast.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter, Fagon. It's all out in the open now. Cleveland shot off his mouth last night and spilled the whole deal. Even letting him know that I'm called X.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, what did your cousin Zilda know about Oscar Dole?
Only that he lived on the island, always had a little money, and his paintings were strictly splattered. I saw one of them. Mr. Thurston has no soul, bad perspective, poor lightning, lousy composition.
Never mind the handbook.
Oh.
So Dole always had money. Zilda ever sent any checks for him?
Who knows? I didn't know.
Fagon, can you operate a speedboat?
Mr. X, I was practically brought up on the Weehawken ferry. My Uncle Ahmed took tickets.
Good. Then get over to the mainland, find out if Zilda cashed any check for Oscar Dole, and if so, whose? Then I want you to stop at the drugstore and pick up some chemicals. I'll give you the list.
Mr. Thurston, I'm as good as gone. Only maybe I should have some money to pay for them,
Fagon, the bullion ship Corvallis sank off Sugar Loaf Rock in 1783, loaded with gold doubloons.
Huh?
Take a look for it as you go by. You may as well come on in, Mrs. Palmer.
Why are you searching for Mr. Dole's belongings?
After Mr. Freeman's remarks last night, you surely know why I'm here.
But you expect to find the paintings here in the cottage?
As a matter of fact, I don't know. But I was hoping to find out something about the man who lives here. Too bad someone's gone over the place ahead of me.
Oh, but you must be mistaken. It has not been touched. That's why I came. I'm going to have the servants clean up the cottage tomorrow.
Kind of funny that an artist wouldn't have a single painting around his lodging, didn't he?
Possibly he disposed of them, Mr. Thurston.
Hmm. How well did you know Oscar Dole?
Scarcely at all. He merely claimed acquaintance with my husband on some basis or other.
I see. Beautiful view from here.
Oh, the loveliest in all Brazil. Can't you see the composition there across the bay? Beauty and the Beast.
What do you mean?
There, at the edge of the water, is the city. Beautiful, gay, carefree Rio. A dazzling spot of light. And back of her, the dark, shadowed hill of the Corcovado. Crouched, waiting to spring.
Have you ever painted it that way?
Oh, I've never tried. I know my limitations, Mr. Thurston. John has sketched it over and over, but he has never been satisfied.
And Miss Stobel?
Anne has found a great many things in her watercolors. Green surf and white foam on the Copacabana. Parakeet, hibiscus bloom. Oh, but though things are quite different, of course.
Mm. Well, this cottage seems to be getting popular all of a sudden. Someone coming up the path.
Hmm. It's John. I wonder why he's coming here.
Mrs. Tormey, maybe it's because he's a very jealous man.
John? Why, yes, I suppose he is. I'd never really thought about it.
Hello, Mr. Thurston. Here I am.
Well, I've begun to think you might be lying out there 10 fathoms down.
You were worried, Mr. X?
Hey, you're going to have to pay a deposit on that boat.
Oh.
How'd you make out?
Nothing to it. Just give me a tall rudder, a stout mast, and I can sail rings around the kangaroo.
Neat trick if you can do it. What did you find out from Zilda?
Oh, she was happy to cash Mr. Dole's check. All of us Zellschmidts are very generous with money.
Yes, that's been noticed. Who were the checks from?
Mr. Thurston, they were all from that woman you've been carrying on with, Miss Stovall.
Anne Stovall. You get the chemicals?
Yeah. But I don't see what you want with them. You're going to use them to test the painting, Mr. X?
Not test the painting, Pagan, but if things work out tonight at dinner, I may use them to find 4 paintings.
Somebody please pass the olives. Thank you.
Mr. Thurston, you can be so completely charming. You make me forget that you are here as a manhunter. Is that the secret of your success?
You're being generous both ways, Mrs. Tormey. What success? I haven't found the painting.
Oh, but you will, Mr. Thurston. You must have some ideas.
Everybody has ideas, Mr. Freeman, from fools to philosophers. An idea is the only thing in life that's free.
Except art, of course.
Art? And there's nothing free about an original Rembrandt.
No, I guess not, Ken. Not when you put it that way. I wonder what he made from this painting when he was alive.
Well, not a great deal, I should imagine, though I believe he did better financially than most of them.
But I doubt very much, Mr. Tormey, that he ever sold 4 paintings for $3 million.
Well, let's hope that no one else has a chance to do that either.
You can bet on it, Mr. Freeman. They won't.
It seems impossible to stay off the subject, even when it is so unpleasant. Of course, we're all suspects, and please...
Tell your Tormey! Tell your Tormey, come quick! The house, she's on fire!
Raoul, what's the matter?
Hey, smoke all over every place!
Looks like he's right, Mr. Tormey.
Yes.
Coming under this door from the hall.
Good Lord, whole wing must have caught.
Mr. Thurston, the whole house is going to burn down. Let's come out of here!
Yeah, I guess we better.
Head for the terrace!
Yeah, all right.
All right, fire everybody. Huh? What? Fire's over.
Over?
Huh? Open those windows on the terrace, Pagan. Let the smoke from those chemicals clear out of here.
Chemicals? Mr. Thurston, what's the meaning of this?
Meaning? Only that I know now who has the 4 Rembrandts. Yes, there you go.
A gun.
See that nobody leaves this room.
Right, Mr. X. Just leave it to me.
I don't understand.
Well, Mr. Tormey, any objections to my having a talk with your wife?
No. No objections. They wouldn't do any good. You're a very clever man, Mr. Thurston. I can only hope that you're also a merciful one.
Mrs. Tormey.
That's you, Mr. Thurston?
Yes, may I come in?
Why, I am just getting ready for bed.
Right in the middle of dinner with the house on fire.
It really isn't on fire at all, is it?
No.
How long have you known?
It had to be you. The person who copied Rembrandt well enough to fool even the experts had to look at life the same way he did. You were the only one here like that. Better open this door, Mrs. Tormey.
No. And you won't get the paintings. No one else will either, because I'm going to burn them here.
Wait, no.
I've given my life for them. Do you think I'll let anyone else have them?
Wait, and listen to me. You said there were things in the history of your country that you'd rather forget. Those 4 paintings mean the chance to end such things for both of our countries. And that's bigger than any personal whim. Does that mean anything to you? or were you lying?
Just a moment. Come in, Mr. Thurston.
Yes.
The paintings are there on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You are very persuasive, Mr. Thurston. Perhaps that is the secret of your success.
That's one success I'd almost rather not have. You've killed two men. Stolen $3 million worth of paintings and sent me a threat on my life, but... Oh, I don't know.
But I didn't. I didn't do any of those things.
What?
Oh, I did poison that man Dole, of course, because he tried to blackmail me. But I did not steal the paintings. I thought all the time they were my own copies until he recognized them as the original.
What? Wait a minute. It could be. It's all right. Mrs. Stormy, don't leave this room. I'll be right back.
Don't worry, Mr. Thurston. I'm not going away.
I've suspected it, Mr. Thurston, since Bob told us last night what had happened. I've always known about her fondness for Rembrandt's work, but it doesn't matter what she did, I love her.
I know, Mr. Thurston. There's nothing I can say. Words are the sinnest thing sometimes. I'm sorry.
If there's anything I can do, John, well, you can count on me. I'll be leaving in the morning, taking the pictures back.
Thank you, Bob.
I guess we'll be leaving too, Mr. Thurston, eh? The case is all wound up.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it, Pagon? Except for one thing. Although she copied them, Mrs. Tormey did not steal the painting.
Thurston.
Furthermore, she didn't kill the guard of the gallery 3 years ago. And she didn't send me the Macumba death warning.
Then who did?
Someone who intended to sell the paintings eventually to some wealthy collector. Someone who had to act fast when I brought up doubts about the copies of the gallery. Someone who came to Rio on a trumped-up excuse. To get the originals before I could.
Bob, no!
Then look out, Mr. X! Pulling a gun!
It won't do him any good!
Good heavens.
Ah. Well, Freeman, you'll still be in shape to fly back to New York tomorrow.
Only with handcuffs, not Rembrandt.
Rembrandt. The man who saw the world in a swirl of shadows with mystic shafts of light. And hidden away in those shadows may be an answer to the whole business of life. Could be that way. Someday, when all the painters have crumbled away to dust, there may be an answer left there. Standing without shadows. And the world's last artist may paint it like that. Someday.
Frigidaire star, Herbert Marshall.
Thanks for being with us. Next week, I promise you another story filled with suspense and mystery. As usual, there'll be Leon Belasco along with Pagon Zellschmidt. So join us, won't you, when next I return as the man called it. Good night.
Frigidaire's Man Called X is directed by Jack Johnstone, with music composed and conducted by Johnny Green. Tonight's story was written by Les Crutchfield. And so until next week, same time, same station, this is Wendell Niles speaking for Frigidaire, made only by General Motors. All characters and incidents used are fictitious. Any resemblance to actual persons or incidents is purely coincidental. Remember, every Thursday, for the best in entertainment, tune in and stay tuned in to CBS, the biggest show in town. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Irma,
time ticked on.
Emma Peel, in her apartment, finished the crossword in the evening paper and looked at the clock, nearly 11:30. Steed had agreed to be back by that time. Mrs. Peel rose, checked that the punch card that would gain her entrance into United Automation was in her handbag, and flung on a warm jacket. Unconsciously, she slipped the distinctive-looking fountain pen into one of the pockets. Outside, on the back stairs, the enormous shape of a 7-foot man began to start to climb up. Mrs. Peel headed for her front door, down the steps, and to her car. The man, who was a pabulum robot, stopped, turned, and lumbered down the steps after her.
The Avengers. And Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 6, the final episode of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel come out on top, after all, and prove that the modern advance in automation can be a deadly gift. John Steed didn't know how much trouble he was letting himself in for when he accepted, as a gift, the distinctively designed fountain pen given to him by Dr. Armstrong of United Automation. For the pen was more than it was supposed to be. Inside it was a simple radio transmitter, beamed back to the computer library, where Armstrong had geared a pabulum robot to exactly the same frequency. Had the plan worked, Steed, carrying the pen, would have guided the robot towards him and been killed in much the same karate way as were the other men. But Steed had, all unwittingly, passed the pen on to Mrs. Peel, who had just had a narrow escape. Steed hadn't done all that well either. He'd been trapped in the inner workings of the air conditioning unit and only escaped by turning up the thermostat control. Back in the main body of the building, he'd headed straight for the nearest telephone.
She said 11:30. It's just gone. Come on. Come on, woman.
Too late, Steve. But in the library, Benson and Armstrong were also bemused. For on the radar scanning screen, the two dots that represented the transmitter and the robot were growing farther apart.
What's happened? The robot's lost him.
Well, that's impossible. His movement, I agree, but it can't do anything than delay matters. It'll get him.
A door opened and a large white-coated figure lumbered in.
The maintenance robot's come to report.
The robot stopped at the computer panel and inserted a card. A moment later, from a slot in the computer, a punch tape, dotted with the minute holes of the computer's vocabulary, gushed forth.
Now, let me see.
Armstrong reached out, tore off the strip, and with a skilled eye, immediately interpreted the tape.
What the?
What's wrong, Doctor? What is it?
The thermostat was altered manually. There's an intruder in the building.
What's that?
Someone using the telephone in the next room. See to it, Benson.
Right. And I'll take him along, too, for good measure.
Right.
Benson drew a gun from his pocket, and Armstrong made a few adjustments to the switches in front of him. The maintenance robot followed Benson quietly to the door of the room. Watch it, Steed.
Gotta risk getting through that library and to the lift. Well, here goes.
No, you don't.
Steed stepped forward to tackle Benson, but the robot behind the door immediately reacted. It stepped forward and cut Steed down. I said, watch it, Steed.
Welcome to the land of the living, Steed.
Oh.
Right. Keep him covered, Bitson.
Don't worry. One move and he's a dead man.
You should count yourself fortunate, Mr. Steed. The Papillon robot that stands before you was programmed just to knock you out and not to kill you.
How very remiss of him. I can't wait for a return belt. It'll be a pleasure to short-circuit him once and for all. Now, let's see.
Don't move.
Oh, is that another of them? Looks almost human. Oh, no, perhaps not.
What? Another crack like that now?
No, do be quiet, Benson. That's the trouble with man, Mr. Steed. He's such an impulsive creature who cannot cope with crises. Today, one wrong decision, one simple error, could bring total destruction.
And I suppose you think you've got the answer, Doctor.
By all means. There, Mr. Steed, in the Papillon robot, the electronic brain. I have blueprints, if you'd care to study them.
I'll take your word for it.
You see, it's a small, complex computer built with these new circuit elements. With the knowledge contained within this library, think of what the machine can learn. It can be programmed with every known fact of science, economics, world history. A Papillon robot capable of absorbing knowledge like food. And with its electronic brain, incapable of a wrong decision.
And what is your end product? The perfect politician?
Exactly. Government by automation.
Sounds to me like an electronic dictatorship.
It is the only solution.
Well, I'd say that would be up to the voters. They might disagree.
Once we take delivery from Harachi of a mass-produced army of Papillon robots, it will only be a question of time.
Dr. Armstrong! Doctor, look!
Armstrong swung his chair round and followed the gaze of Benson towards the radar scanning screen. The two points of light had started to flash again. The small one was nearer the center of the screen, the larger one following behind.
About to enter the building. A friend of yours carrying the fountain pen, eh, Mr. Steed?
Maybe.
Well, it's an opportunity to demonstrate to you my radio-controlled Papillon. Whoever it is who is calling has a very nasty surprise awaiting them.
Mrs. Peel arrived and gained entrance to the main building quite easily. She used her punch card in the hall.
Enter the lift, please.
And she took the lift up.
Now, where the devil is Steve? How do I find him in a building as big as this?
Good question, Mrs. Peel. In the library, Armstrong had switched on the TV screens and was able to observe Mrs. Peel quite clearly.
What a charming young woman. I'm sorry she won't be joining us.
Armstrong reached out to a panel marked Lift on Control and pressed the assembly shop button. In the lift, Mrs. Peel was vaguely surprised when the lift glided to a stop and the doors opened. She stepped out into a huge room filled with crates and boxes, all filled with the various parts of the Papillon robot. Armstrong watched her progress with interest.
Very interesting. But the other robot geared to the transmitter should be with us soon. Yes. Closed circuit TV is picking him up in the lift.
Steed watched with growing apprehension as the enormous figure of the Papillon robot filled the lift. It stopped at the assembly room floor, and the robot lumbered out, pursuing Mrs. Peel down the pathway between the crates.
I think you must agree, Mr. Steed, that the automated assassin was a stroke of genius. Loyal, obedient, and extremely efficient. Just how efficient, you'll be able to see for yourself at any moment.
Now, look here,
Armstrong. Don't move, Steed. Don't move. Just sit and watch.
Is this your idea of progress, Armstrong? Killing by robot?
I can allow nothing to stand in my way. My robots will prevent the ultimate catastrophe.
But at what price? A Papillon robot police, Dave. People are not machines. Of course, they're fallible. That's what makes them human.
While Steve was talking, he was working at the armrest of his chair. He remembered how Armstrong had demonstrated all kinds of gadgets that were worked by the buttons concealed in the arm. The security gates at the lifts, the airflow control, even piped music and extra furniture that rose from the floor. All these things were at Steed's fingertips as he raised the arm. With the flat of his hand, he pressed the whole lot at once. Steed ignored Armstrong, threw himself at Benson. The gun went off. Steed got a grip on Benson and threw him at the computer pad. Steed rushed for the lift. The doors opened automatically. Come on, Steed, you're cutting this one a bit fine. In the assembly shop, Emma stopped her investigations when she heard the familiar sound of the robot's footsteps.
I don't like the sound of that at all.
The robot approached. Mrs. Peel dodged, and the robot plunged its way through the crates, cutting a direct path towards her. Mrs. Peel reached into her pocket and withdrew an automatic pistol. As the enormous figure pushed crates and boxes out of its way, Mrs. Peel crouched down and then fired at point blank. The pabulum robot didn't pause but continued relentlessly. Steve entered from the far side of the room.
Don't tackle it! It's a robot controlled by your pen and your jacket pocket!
Right!
And approaching at speed, caught the pen neatly. The robot swung round and now meant to attack him.
Steve, throw back the pen!
At that moment, Dr. Armstrong appeared in his chair, moved by the second maintenance robot. He made an adjustment to the controls, and the maintenance robot left him and went after Steve.
Watch it, Steve! You've got both of them on you now! Throw me the pen!
No fair!
Steve had a far better idea. As the maintenance robot attacked and swung its arm in a vicious karate chop, Steve ducked under the blow and fixed the pen in the robot's overall pocket. Immediately, the first robot turned and attacked his fellow machine.
No! No! Stop! Stop them!
Armstrong, reacting with horror at the battle between the two robots, thrust his chair between them.
No! No! Stop! 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 Ah!
Well, Armstrong always did say that human beings were fallible. He's just made his last mistake. Come on, Mrs. Peel, let's leave the machines to take over. They'll destroy all this quicker than we can. Come on, let's take a quiet drive home. Horse and cart, perhaps?
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers, brought to you by the makers of Cold Water Omo.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.
And Cantiga.